prison of endless possibility.
Sam, it's watching time. Holy smokes, is there a lot of news in the world? And, you know, our typical little recaps, here we are at episode 3. And, boy, if the streaming world didn't get more chips on the table, what are we doing?
I mean, thank God we launched the show, because it's just... there's so much to catch up on. I mean, there's things that we haven't even talked about, you know, just the amount of stuff that you can just find on these streaming services, the new stuff coming out. You know, I never thought that we were going to get back-to-back good comic book release shows releasing at the exact same time. Like, it always was like, oh, it's a treat. This is coming out now. Now we've got Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Invincible dropping at the same time. And it's just like, oh, you could do a show on both of these shows.
I mean, look, so I haven't seen it yet, but Invincible, you've seen a couple episodes, or is it all a big dump, or is it coming out week to week?
So they're doing the Boys method. They drop the first three and now it's week to week. So So I was about a week behind, and I watched the first three. And then by last Thursday, I was kind of chomping at the bit to get the next episode. And it's really interesting. I mean, the voice cast is great. Steven Yeun plays the titular character, Invincible. His dad is played by J.K. Simmons.
cancel.
Twist. Yeah.
Cancel within a minute. All right, go ahead.
J.K. Simmons plays the dad, which is Omni-Man, kind of their version of Superman. I mean, some people that you get in it, Jillian Jacobs, Jason Mantzoukas, just John Hamm plays a side character.
Okay, acceptable.
Wally Goggins plays shadowy character in it. So, and, you know, just as you go through it, I think your boy Seth Rogen makes a guest appearance for a quick.
Now, why is he my boy? Why can't I have Walt Goggins?
I actually am not a Seth Rogen hater. I think he's a guy that has taken his little bit of fame and done as much with it as you possibly can.
I mean, well, without Seth Rogen,
he did The Boys. He's part of The Boys.
Yeah. He's taken some real risks. So I'm going to assume then that Invincible is in the vein of The Boys, meaning it's probably not really for younger viewers.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of comes off at first as something that might be, and by the end of the first episode, you realize, oh, this is not for younger viewers. It just to give a little synopsis of it for you, it's a 17-year-old kid of this version of kind of basically a Superman, you know, guy that comes here from an alien planet, wears a cape, flies around, helps everybody. He just comes into his powers, and so he's learning how to be a superhero, and he's kind of learning it's not as glamorous as you might have thought, and there's some things that suck about it, and maybe there's some things that he doesn't know that aren't the best about being a superhero. So it's kind of that what if being a superhero was real kind of thing that The Boys takes in.
Sure.
But in other aspects, you know, the politics of being run by, you know, the government, or the, you know, just little, I don't want to get too much into it because there are some really big mysteries about it, but, you know, it's very interesting because it's like they do have their version of The Flash. They do have their version of Batman. They do have their version of Hellboy, you know, it's kind of like they threw everything in. I mean, there's kaijus, there's aliens, there's, you know, so it's kind of like they threw all the tropes of comic books and threw it in here. And then now where you get to see it through the eyes of this 17-year-old kid who's still in high school, still nervous about dating girls and trying to make his dad proud, you know, out there
beating
aliens and stuff. So it's bloody. It's not afraid to, it doesn't pull its punches. And, you know, I think that's one of those shows that if you get through the whole first episode, you'll definitely be like, okay, where is this going?
Okay. Well, it's definitely on my list. I've just ran out of time.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about adult animation last week, and I would put this right up there with it. You know, and you could tell there's times where the characters aren't moving a whole lot. It has that kind of first season of Archer feel to it with the animation where it's very still characters, just their mouths are moving. But you could tell they save that up because when it's time to do the action scenes, they really do some fun stuff with it.
Well, I usually don't like to go over awards, Sam. I find awards to be a little strange and very polarizing at best. And especially, you know, awards now, you just never know why someone wins and why someone loses. And then, but, you know, when something that you like wins, I can see where that's exciting. And there were a few things in the SAG Awards are not really, I mean, I don't know. It's more about the actual actors, which I kind of enjoy. Two shows that stood out to me that I was really pumped about, and I'm a big proponent of, is Ted Lasso, which is by far, in my opinion, probably the biggest standout show on Apple Plus. If you're going to get Apple Plus, this is the show that you want to see. Mm-hmm. And
it's amazing that it's not more well known.
I know. It's the only show that I can cry and laugh at the same time. And there are two shows that can do that to me.
Yeah, I would call it a comedy, but yes. I would say that half the episodes made me, you know, choke up a little bit. I think part of it was knowing that Jason Sudeikis was going through a divorce while he filmed this. So,
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So I kind of knew that inside baseball. So watching it, you're like, oh, here's this guy kind of going through some heartbreak, and he's actually going through this kind of similar situation in real life. Like, so I kind of felt bad for him and just saying, oh man, he's really pouring himself into this role, poor guy. So, but other than that, I mean, I will quote it. I think it's hilarious. I think it's one of the more genuinely like good shows. It's not a punching down show. It's very much a, there's this kind of lovable goofball and everybody thinks he's nuts, but
it's uplifting.
Yeah.
How about that?
Oh, I mean, you know, believe how much do you make you do you want to follow the lasso way? I feel like we're all a little bit that writer from the second or third episode where he meets with him and he's going to do a piece on him. And he goes, as much as I want to tell you that I think he's going to be a failure, I can't help but root for the guy. And it's just kind of, I feel like that's what this show is that I went in very begrudgingly. My buddy had bugged me to watch it. And then finally I watched it and I buzzed through it in like a week. I was like, oh, I can't wait for more of this. And all I could think of is that it's an impossible thing to film because there's a team of guys in a locker room. Like it's not a very COVID friendly show, but I think I read somewhere that they're like two-thirds or three quarters through season two. So I'm hoping, I think that Apple should really pump a lot of advertising into pumping up the show.
They really need to.
This should
be their flagship. It really should.
It's the show that everybody needs right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and then going on shows that I didn't know that I needed at the time. And I had heard about, but I was like, I don't know. I'd heard about Schitt's Creek. And then I was like, you know, is this really what I'm thinking about? And then I was like, but Catherine O'Hara, she's so freaking good. But like, you know, look, this is not a show for everybody by any stretch, but it scratches an itch that I like. And I don't know exactly what that is. It's really hard for me to define, but I think there's just a lot of standout great, like Eugene Levy and his son are just, they're really good.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my quarantine shows that I had on my list forever. I kept hearing what was good. And then finally I think it was last year during award season, they were showing a clip of Moira and the son trying to cook enchiladas. And then she kept yelling, fold in the cheese at him. And it just tickled me where I went, okay, I got to watch the show and give it a little bit. And it's got a little bit of those Frasier vibes of these people think they're better than us, but they're not better than us kind of thing.
Yep.
And, you know, the small town quirky neighbor kind of vibes of you probably know somebody like this, or you've probably seen somebody like this kind of thing. And it just, it's such an inclusive show. Like it's got a little bit of everything, you know, and I didn't realize that after a few seasons, it had become kind of a LGBTQ kind of rally show, that it was very, like, because I mean, there are gay characters in it, but it's not a gay show. It's not about that at all. It's just about these high society people that got stuck in a small town and now they're picking their lives up and starting over again. And it's such a great, it's just a great show. I mean, I put it on par with kind of like Friends and Seinfeld, and where you could just throw on an episode and just watch it and enjoy it. You don't need to watch it in order, even though there's things that happen to do it. It does progress from season to season, but you can just kind of throw on a random one and watch it and enjoy it and chuckle a little bit while you you know, do something on your phone or whatever.
Yeah, but, very, very bingeable if you mm-hmm. if you have the time. But, you know, I find it, you know, I just find it enjoyable. You know, it's yeah. a good relaxing show.
The only complaint I have about it is that I wish it was more episodes like a Seinfeld or Friends. Like, I feel like this is a show that could have been in the old heydays, you know, six, sure. seven, eight, 10 seasons. But, you know, when it's controlled by the artist and he wants to do five seasons and out and they're, you know, what, 10 or 12 episodes a piece, it's like maybe that's part of the magic of why it stayed good and it wasn't reaching for plot lines and like, say a Shameless or something like that. So yeah. I'm all the kudos to both of those shows. I think they're both very positive, even though they're not afraid to, you know, tell some jokes at people's behest or anything, but it's usually all in good fun. And it's kind of one of those shows. Both of those are shows that have good lessons in them without being preachy or annoying.
Yeah. I find, yeah, it doesn't put politics on a pedestal.
It's just kind of, hey, you know, it kind of shows you kind of how people can be redeemed, even like they don't come into town being the nicest people in the world. And yet they become, you know, part of that of Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, they're completely opposite, like in every way, but they have to coexist. And it's it's one of those situations where it'd be nice if people would actually kind of look at these and be like, you know what, this is exactly how maybe we need to behave a little bit and kind of find some commonalities rather than our opposites so fast. What else is in the news?
Oh, let's see. Well, I mean, then we have to totally just disregard everything the SAG Awards said because they gave Wonder Woman 84 an award,
which
kills me because just before that, they gave something to The Mandalorian for stunt ensemble and because it was for a series. And I'm like, oh, The Mandalorian won an award. How nice. And then I saw that Wonder Woman 84 did it. I just went, I'm out. The CGI is not good in it. The stunt work doesn't look that cool. Why this is an award winning movie. It just shows you why awards are stupid.
Yeah. You know, it's like for all the good things, like, but then, you know, here's the thing. It's like, what is it pitted against? It's Defy Bloods, Mulan, News of the World, and the Trial of the Chicago 7. Now, I haven't seen any of the other movies, but I will go on record to say that my guess is there's not crazy stunts in the Trial for the Chicago 7. That's just me.
Yeah, and you know what? I would even say, even though I didn't think Mulan was a very good movie, that, I mean, there's some very inexplicable people can run across walls and over the ceiling type of stuff in it. At least that probably took some wire work to make it look cool.
That's what I was thinking. That's got to be some wire foo. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I think that sometimes that's why awards are kind of dumb, is because sometimes you have people voting on them that don't know what they're doing. I mean, it's the same in sports. A couple of players get off to a big start and then all of a sudden they're the MVP favorites. And meanwhile, there's maybe somebody else that actually means more to his team that doesn't get enough votes because they're on a small market and it doesn't matter. James Harden, Steph Curry is your MVP. You know, it's just kind of, it's one of those things that's why you can't really worry about the awards and stuff. That's kind of silly. The proof is in the pudding. It's what stands the test of time. I mean, who's talking about, I just watched Wonder Woman 84 other than us dummies from a couple of days ago for this stupid show.
they couldn't give Gal Gadot an actual acting award. That would be insane.
Yeah. I mean, unless it was like most willing to just go for it with a terrible script.
Yeah.
Like she was,
would have to be a lot of asterisks and subcategories to make her fit.
Yeah. Even though I'm no huge Gal Gadot fan in general, I don't think she's like this amazing person. I don't blame her for that movie at all. Like, I think that she was doing her best to be a movie star in that. And there's parts of it where she's like, wow, she really lights up the screen and she's smiling and she's acting her best in these weird
CGI
things.
No one tells her no. She's too beautiful. We all know this. No, what is it going to say? Like, oh, you didn't do that really well.
Yeah, but then, you know, that's the thing. It's like, it's not like I find any fault with her in any of these. It's more that it's a shame that, kind of like Ben Affleck, you're wasting an actor that could be really good in this role in bad movies.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Now, you put this note in. I don't know much about the New Gods.
Well, you don't have to know it now. I mean, that's just DC is the, I put in our notes, DC is the best at what they do, and what they do is a very nice cancel movies they've announced. So they were going to make a New Gods movie. They were going to make a trench movie that was based on Aquaman with those weird eyeless creatures that were in the trench. They were going to make a movie about that. They hired those guys, they announced them, and now they're not making them. And it's just, I think that's part of the problem with them, is that they announce movies kind of like the old school way, where you'd announce a project and then maybe it wouldn't go through, and really only people in Variety ever read about it. And now it's kind of this new thing where it's like, well, no, this is going to get picked up by all these different, you know, comic book movie kind of websites and stuff and nerd sites, and it's gonna go around Twitter. So when you announce a movie, people are expecting it, and so they just, they seem to still really not know what they want to do with this whole universe. I mean, I think at this point, just going back to whatever Snyder doing,
is that what this is all stemming from, the Snyder cut?
I don't know. I mean, they say they're not going to go down with any that rabbit hole of any other movies. And really, it seems like it's kind of ruined by the fact that Snyder's done so much press about what he was planning on doing. Like, why go see these movies? That's, we already, you know, you could go through interviews and know what the plot is going to be about the future two Justice League movies he had planned. So I think they're really at kind of a weird stalemate where they're like, well, Shazam was pretty good. Aquaman was pretty good. We're making a Flash movie, allegedly. You know, I don't, you know, other than that Batman movie, I don't know what they have that's actually filming. I mean, I think Black Adam is starting to film soon, but
now are they actually bringing that into the Shazam stuff?
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be its own movie first.
Oh, come on. Shazam was good. Why not go ahead and do that? Ugh.
Yeah, and I think they actually cast somebody to be a bad guy in Shazam, but I can't remember who it was. I think it was like a new character, which I already think is hilarious. That it's like, you're in Shazam 2, and you're already like, let's make up a character. Like, well, why make a movie about this guy if he's got no bench, you know?
Well, the thing is, there's no heat anymore. Like all the Shazam heat is over with. I mean, it basically was like a flash. Like, oh wow, this is actually a pretty good DC movie. Don't worry about it. We're not going to make another one for, you know, for 5 years, whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't know what their plan is. That they seem to run it like a regular studio, where they don't realize that it's important that you kind of keep our interest with this. Because I think that when you look at how long these movies come out before, you know, some people wanted to kind of rewatch like Batman v Superman before rewatching Justice League, because they're like, wait, where were these guys? Where, as opposed to Marvel, when you're pumping something out every 3-4 months, you're just always in the conversation. I mean, look at the difference in news for them. DC canceled a bunch of movies this week and got, you know, what, mediocre returns on this whole Snyder thing, and is getting backlash from fans where they're review bombing their other movies. And meanwhile, Marvel/Disney comes out and goes, here's a new Loki trailer. Here's a new Black Widow trailer. We're finally releasing it. Oh, and here's the Obi-Wan cast announcement. Oh, and then we've got a cartoon called The Bad Batch coming out in May. And here's a trailer for that too. It's just like, boom, boom, boom. I mean, it really feels like an unfair fight at this point.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I'm very, for someone who was very into Star Wars, I am very tepid on it. You know, Mandalorian has earned my trust back in a big way. Okay, so let's just get that out on the table. So, you know, however you want to pin me that. But Obi-Wan, I mean, I like Ewan McGregor a lot. I see a lot of people in there that I'm just like, I don't know how you fit. And then that whole Bad Batch, I wasn't expecting a cartoon. Or a CG, you know, an animated. I thought they were doing more live action, and that, so it kind of threw me.
Yeah, I think that's one of the few things they announced that was a cartoon, when they had that huge December announcement of just a ton of Star Wars stuff. I think that was one, but it's got characters from The Mandalorian in it. I don't know if you noticed that Fennec Shand is in it, and I don't know if she was in previous Star Wars canon. I have not watched all of the Clone Wars and all that. And
you're talking the wrong guy when it comes to that.
Yeah, I've watched, I know, quarantine, I watched a couple episodes of Clone Wars and a couple episodes of Rebels, and they're interesting, but it just wasn't, it just wasn't enough for me to like keep up with it, especially like, you know, we've talked about it. You get that limited TV time and it's like, well, am I going to waste my time trying to catch up on this thing I sort of like, or am I going to watch something I really am into? So I'd kind of like to do one of those binges where I go through and watch one of those, like the important episodes, quote unquote, things,
yeah,
just to get a little of that Ahsoka background and get a little bit of background of the people from Rebels and know, cause I think a lot of them are going to be making their live debuts here pretty soon. And I agree with you. When J.J. Abrams' first Star Wars movie came out, I was like, give me all the Star Wars. I loved Rogue One. I tolerated Solo. Like, it wasn't my favorite, but I'd had some cool stuff in it. But then these last two Star Wars movies, man, sure kind of burnt me out on it a little bit. And it just, especially the last one, it just felt like such a dud. And my excitement was really waning on it. And the Mandalorian has kind of re-sparked it.
Yeah.
I think they do just enough of tying into kind of the main stuff and exploring the outer rim of everything else. And so I really am kind of all in on this, but you know, it doesn't take a lot, you know, a couple of bad movies in a row and you're just, all of a sudden you just don't really care what happens next. It's like these Godzilla movies that we're going to talk about, like, you know, if you're watching this for continuity, it's the wrong way to go.
Yeah. I mean, so I was a kid who would go to Suncoast Video and buy crazy expensive VHS versions of Godzilla, because it was really the only place you could get it at the time. I mean, I had Mechagodzilla, you know, and I mean, I had a lot of these movies. And there's something with the Americanized version, starting with that Matthew Broderick Godzilla. And it's like America or American style completely fucks Godzilla up. Like, and I don't, I've watched a lot of the new ones, like even like the King of Monsters with Ghidorah, but you know, it's like the people are secondary, even tertiary. There was, you know, it was really about Godzilla and like this, the character was emoting, you had a guy in a suit, and as cheesy as that was, these guys could really somehow through a connection with at least the audience and me was like, I could kind of understand what Godzilla was up to. And there were, like in King of Monsters, like there are a few scenes, and because there are only really a few scenes, but like the one where he pulls the monster's mouth open and just blasts him down the throat and rips him apart. That was awesome. But that's just 1 5 to 7 second scene that like, that's all. I mean, I can't tell you much more about it except Bryan Cranston died. And I don't even think it was that one.
No, that was the first Godzilla movie.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and see, that's what I'm saying. Like, and like, I know Mothra was in the other one, and this was kind of it is a sequel to that one, but like, it's just like, the longer I watched it, the less I even understood. And I am okay with just having a movie that's all about popcorn, but like on some level, I was just like, man, this just doesn't really, it's not doing anything for me.
Yeah, no, I was excited about this. I almost organized a group watch party at the movie theaters this week to see it. And I thankfully last second changed it over to an old movie because I didn't want to be on the hook for making everybody see this movie.
Yeah. I'd much rather watch one from the 60s.
Yeah. I mean, and it just, it's not bad because I go into these Godzilla movies expecting corny dialogue.
Sure.
I expect it to make me laugh.
We're going to have, we're going to have like this whole flat earth thing. Now we're going to have this whole new
hollow earth.
Oh geez. I can't even wait for that.
And I don't know if you ever watch Screen Ranch pitch meetings on YouTube. Those are great where they take a movie and they pretend it's one guy playing both parts, but it's one person pitching a movie to say Netflix or HBO Max or whatever the streaming service is. And it's just them kind of talking through the movie, talking through all the dumb plot points and just, you know, how you need to get through a portal to get to Hollow Earth in one scene. But then in the next scene, Godzilla can just fire breathe down to the middle of the planet, and it's just you know, it doesn't even make sense from page to page on this thing. And it's funny because like I enjoyed the fight in the ocean. I wasn't ready to see King Kong throw up.
I
could have used a little warning about that. Their fights are fine. It seemed like Godzilla was just kind of a crazy plot device in this. Whereas Kong kind of got his own story and was a little bit interesting. Godzilla was just something to be. It was kind of that.
They used the fight choreography from other like high quality movies and expanded it to, well, quite honestly, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, they really took a page from Pacific Rim. I mean, like, I hold Pacific Rim to a certain level because, I mean, it's like, if you're going to compare something, you know, there were just the very interesting camera shots that were chosen that you would never see in a Godzilla movie. Mm-hmm. Everything's usually wide, establishing, and counter shots.
Yeah, and I specifically noticed the Pacific Rim thing when, spoiler alert, everybody, if you're worried about getting this movie ruined for you, but when Mechagodzilla shows up, he was doing the kind of rocket punches and stuff like that, and I was like, oh, that's right from this. And honestly, this could have been a decent idea. I mean, we're trying to make a robot that can fight these giant monsters so they stop tearing up our planet.
But you need to establish that in a story that makes – like sense from the start. Like those details were given so late in the game. Just like, wait a minute, you know, this would have been cool to know, because I mean, like, even the original Mechagodzilla was actually like hidden as Godzilla, and that's what I thought I was going to get. I thought at first when Godzilla came out, that was the Mechagodzilla, you know, and then Godzilla would fight him, he would blast him, and then all of a sudden you start seeing the metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't sure how we were going to get it, but it's just, and then it does that thing where in the final fight, the Mechagodzilla is just unstoppable until he's not. And it's, you know, where it doesn't look like there's any reason that even with two of them, they should be able to take him out, because he's got missiles and lasers and breath and rocket punches and all this bullshit. And it's just like, okay, well, now they pinned him.
Well, and I don't know if you know this, but like, really, as a hacker, you don't need to know another person's password. As long as you have a cup of water at their computer, you can get into anything.
Yeah, and I felt like you could eliminate half of the human scenes in it. Like, why they needed the kid from Deadpool 2 to be there with Millie Bobby Brown and the podcast guy is beyond me. I just for quote unquote comic relief that wasn't really that funny. It's just
there was a lot of hashtag shadow hashtags in there.
Yeah, I mean, it was just literally like, oh, I'm the guy that has to tell you every 30 seconds, this isn't a good idea, guys, and then you do it anyways.
Like, I'll tell you what, he releases podcasts very quickly. And again, oh, by the way, this is a little late. There was Easter and there was a lot of other stuff going on. So, you know, we'll send you a refund tomorrow.
Yeah, no, send us your PayPals.
Yeah. I'll give you my crypto address.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, Kong versus Godzilla, just as dumb as I think it's actually Godzilla versus Kong, but I don't feel the need to get the name right. So yeah,
there's no reason to.
I think there's a reason that WB said, you know what, throw it up on HBO Max. It's because they really just don't make that good of movies. I mean, I was even looking at, what was it? The SAG Award winner.
It's
not the Five Bloods. It was, let me look it up really quick. It was, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah. I was so intrigued by Judas and the Black Messiah. I was like, ooh, this looks like a good movie. These are great actors. And then at the end, I was like, this was a really interesting story that I didn't realize was a real story, but yet I was confused by kind of the pacing of it. I was confused as to what was going on half the time. And it just was one of those things where I just feel like, did Warner Brothers forget how to make movies? Are they too worried about
dumb stuff? That argument is hard for me to necessarily.
Because this should have been great. I mean, if you look at all the actors in it, the material is interesting. The fact that the CIA or somebody, or, you know, heck, look at, I watched it. I can't remember if it was the FBI or the CIA was infiltrating the Black Panthers, and how it's a person that infiltrates them and then realizes, hey, maybe they're not this terrorist organization that you guys are painting them as. And then just, you know, all this racism of the time, it should have been a great movie, I feel like. And it was an all right movie. And if that's the best they can do with these $100 million movies they're putting out. I mean, damn. I hope James Gunn, more power to you. I hope they let you do your thing for Suicide Squad, because otherwise I have, you know, I'd like to think that the new Batman with Robert Pattinson is going to be good. But, you know,
unless their they track make Batman record, a detective, it never will be good.
Yeah, and I think that's my one piece of hope for this, is it does look like, you know, he's showing up on the crime scene to do some detecting. So I'm hoping that that's the version we need. We need that version. We want that version. It's the one that works. He can't just be the strongest guy. It can't always be that.
I'm totally with you. Can we just go ahead and take a look at Falcon? I have some words about this is the saggy middle.
Mm-hmm. It's
a bridge point, but it was, it felt like, I don't say this lightly, it felt kind of like a dud.
Yeah. And I wouldn't quite go there. I feel like there's, you know, we talked about the bottle episode.
Yep.
You know, there's going to be some episodes that pay for the shiny stuff that happened in the first two, and that's fine with me.
Baron Zemo dancing in freaking Madripoor was a little strange to me. That was weirdly edited. I don't understand like why that was needed. Like, yeah, is that a follow my lead?
Yeah, I don't quite know why they were partying. It didn't really seem to need to be there. It just kind of all of a sudden they're at the docks and they're like, wow, they really know how to party here. Like, they give New York a run for its money. So I don't know if maybe that was almost purposely planted in there to become a meme, because Baron Zemo giving the fist pump made me laugh pretty good. But yeah, I was a little confused during that whole party scene. Like, what are they doing? Because they didn't even look like they were partying that hard. They're like, well, those guys can party. I'm like, I didn't even see you guys take a drink.
Like, and then, yeah, it's like this is Madripoor. I mean, I would imagine you guys would be like doing blow. You know what I mean? Like it would be crazy.
Yeah, no, it would have been interesting. You know, I guess that's just part of the Disney Plus thing. They don't even, you know, they're not even trying to do like a Rick and Morty, have a bunch of purple powder on the table kind of thing. That was out in the streaks. He had his snake egg shot earlier. He got messed up 2 hours later.
but there was
a lot I liked in this episode.
I know they're introducing Madripoor, which I'm really kind of like, I know where you're going with this. Are you telling me, like, because everybody's thinking it, are all the X-Men living in Madripoor? I don't know.
Oh, I don't think so. I thought it was their way of introducing a John Wick-esque kind of underworld to this universe here, is that, hey, look at there. You've seen mostly the good guys that are operating, you know, in the movies, but here there's some stuff going down. There's people trying to make super soldier serums. There's people selling stuff on the streets. And here's this one island nation where you can do all of it. And there's really nobody that has any power over it except for this power broker guy. I wasn't expecting an X-Men. Where I was expecting maybe an X-Men connection was maybe some sort of Weapon X program. And now I'm kind of convinced at best we're going to get like a post-credit scene of something like that. But I think that we're sticking kind of more generic super soldiery. I don't think that we're going to, but we could, you know, obviously they're playing with genetics here. So it could be something that opens that up.
And Sharon Carter is now on the scene, but then it almost acted like she was like only going to be in this episode. I think that's a misdirect, but I mean, you know, I was glad to see her in there. I think she's a cool character. I would have loved to have seen her better explore. First of all, I don't remember her name. I think it's Emily something.
Van Camp.
I don't know if you're familiar with the show. Oh, it had an eight in it. She had a show like it was about revenge, and she was kind of the badass in it. Basically it was this revenge mission of clipping off these people. I think she's got the chops to do a great spinoff. The problem is they've never really totally fleshed her out, and Madripoor has given her some ammunition to be more fleshed out. But again, we still don't know why she's there. I mean, we know that she's in hiding, but like, I don't know. It's just like, are you telling me the CIA was like, no, you can't? Like, after.
I mean,
it just seems like, you know, everybody else got kind of pardons and whatnot, and she couldn't.
she wasn't on that endgame battlefield, dog. You know, no. Well, no, I liked the flip side of it though. So here's Bucky and here's Sam. Where, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Bucky less so, but where their blind kind of allegiance to Cap has worked out well for them in the end, whereas hers it did not. She's like, here's somebody I went right for his thing. I did the right thing. I did what he said I needed to do. And now look at me. I'm estranged from my family. I can't call my dad. I'm this poor rich art dealer in Madripoor. So no, I thought that was a cool way of showing that, like, just because you do the right thing, things don't always turn out rosy for you.
And
I think that's kind of what Cap's kind of all about, is doing the right thing, even if it's not necessarily the right thing for the American government or the right thing for the mission. I think that he's good at getting people to do what's right. I mean, in contrast with what we see John Walker in the first episode, where you can tell he damn near wants to hook that guy up to some jumper cables to get the answers he wants out of him.
John Walker gets spit on, and he's tried to do some intimidation, which we really never see Cap necessarily do.
I thought about that exactly. Well, you know what though, we have to retract that, because remember, he did kick what's his face off of the roof in Civil War, but he only did that because he knew Falcon would be there to catch him.
Exactly.
But still, he'll fake it out. He'll fake intimidation, I guess.
Okay, so that scene that you're talking about with, and that was in Winter Soldier when he kicked off what's his face. Yeah. So interestingly, you bring that up, because just based on characters and stakes and villains that can be culpable and redeemed, here's a problem. Our girl from that superpowered, she burned up an entire, a hospital?
It was some kind of whatever that commercial's for at the beginning, refugee supply,
that's right,
reincarnation, something along those lines. That it was kind of a guard. I think it was like they were holding back supplies.
Okay, so
same time, I kind of thought about that. I was like, yeah, maybe you are, but if all of a sudden we had to feed twice as many people in the world, the whole food chain would be messed up, and it would be a nightmare. So I could see where you'd be like, hey, we need to hold back some supplies because we don't know how desperate people are going to be. So, I mean, I don't know where they land on the morality scale here.
That's what I'm saying. The morality scale is she just tipped it. She just committed multiple. I mean, we're talking about she did murder. She did murder in quantity.
Yeah, she killed. There was a lot of guys tied up in that basement. Right.
It was all in a very sadistic kind of way. So there's no redemption. It becomes a Vader scenario. And this, and what I mean by that is, you have Anakin when he makes his full gross turn killing kids. There's no coming back from that. Now, even though, that's not the greatest of examples, because those films were filmed so much later, because I believe that, Vader does get redeemed. I like to believe in that story. However, looking at it now, it's like, dude, you were involved in some really heinous stuff. And so I don't know. I don't think she can live. I mean, that's just how I'm laying it down.
Well, and it almost feels like maybe after three episodes or two episodes, nobody quite felt like she was the bad guy yet. Like, you're kind of like, oh, she's getting supplies from
refugee she's the bad
camp.
Guy now.
So now I think that kind of, maybe it was a little ham-fisted, but it was the way of being like, no, this person is the bad guy. Don't get it twisted, but we'll also see, I feel like we're only halfway through. There's a lot to, and while we talked about this was kind of a slower episode. I thought it was a pretty funny episode. Zemo, I thought, had some hilarious parts in it. I mean, aside from the fist bump, him lecturing Bucky on not liking the Marvin Gaye album Trouble Man and saying that it encapsulated the African American experience.
Fleshed out villain. Sam, fleshed out villains are good.
Oh, and Sam just looking at him and going, he's out of line, but he's right. Yeah. I mean, that was hilarious.
The Bucky's, whole pimp thing.
I can't run in these heels.
Yeah, well, you look like a pimp. Well, only Americans, you know, look at this kind of clothing, and the first thing, you know, it's almost like the slobby American, like, you know.
I liked Zemo in this. Like, I was ready. I thought he was coming off strange at first, and I realized, like, you know, you didn't really get to know him before. He didn't talk a lot in the last movie, so it's not like you really got his personality. I heard somebody else say this. He's one of the few Marvel villains that succeeded in his goal. The only thing he didn't succeed in was killing himself at the end of the movie. But he, you know, he broke up the Avengers. He killed a bunch of super soldiers.
The guy has some like machinations that he is able to really, and like little things like do the smell check on the food. And if it doesn't smell good, give it to them. You know, it's like that.
Oh, and that was another thing that was hilarious. His creepy, creepy old butler guy that
who's like a character actor from the 80s. It was like really crazy to see him.
Oh, really? See, I didn't recognize them. And I just think that's a funny trope to have for rich people, that they have some old guy that just can't wait to see him and get him a glass of champagne. Oh, what else was good in this? Oh, Bucky saying, wow, she's kind of awful now about Sharon Carter.
Oh, totally.
Oh, and the other thing I loved was that there's at least three or four times in the episode where they run away, they lose Zemo. Even once Falcon even calls it out, he's like, hey, where's Zemo? Who's seen Zemo? And they're always in trouble. And then he comes around and rescues the day, or shows up with a car, or comes around the corner and is like, no, I wasn't trying to get away from you guys. I'm right here. So,
are you okay with the mask stuff? Because it feels like that was just like really putting the round peg in the square hole. Like, I was like, you know, I know that Zemo wears the mask, and like, that's what we're used to. And that they even said, you know, he is a Baron. And, you know, like, that was cool, but I was just like, yeah, but like, the mask looks weird, number one, but like, so you put the mask on to blow shit up?
Yeah, and I kind of feel like we're at a point now where I almost prefer the Deadpool mask. If you're going to have a mask, put the white eyes in, animate them, have it do what you want to do, kind of thing.
Preaching to save.
I think that would look better. But at the same time, I'm waiting, because he, you know, they made a point of him seeing it and kind of stopping and grabbing it very like respectfully. So I think that maybe they like you said, fleshed out villains, fleshed out characters. I mean, everybody seems to be getting a lot of meat. I think that this was the goal of these Marvel shows, is that they looked at characters in other movies like Sam Wilson and Winter Soldier and Scarlet Witch and Vision, and say, hey, these are characters that, man, they are really cool characters that we are just buzzing through movies and running through some of their plot lines here off screen, really. So like, let's give them time where we can show people, hey, this character is as complex and interesting as an Iron Man, or maybe more so than a Captain America. And we're going to show you their stories. And I think that's where they're nailing it. I mean, here it is with Zemo, and are you even like rooting against him at this point? It's kind of like, wow, hey, this guy is sort of redeeming himself, even though he did kill the King of Wakanda. And I'm surprised how many breadcrumbs they put in here that I didn't see that last scene coming, that, oh, here's the Dora Milaje.
Well, it's funny, because I had just, my daughter wanted to watch Black Panther. So I'm not the hottest on that movie. I think that it could have been done a lot differently and a lot cooler. Neither
Black, here nor Black Panther.
Yes.
I actually have to admit, I got a lot of shit from some people last week for calling Black Panther a B movie.
I
want to clarify, because I think that I used the wrong term, because I think sometimes I grade stuffs a lot. I go A, B, C, D, F, kind of thing, almost like a Yelp rating. So sure. I think the term B movie, sometimes people think it means like, you know,
like
movie
schlock.
Yeah, movie that plays on TNT in the afternoon that, you know, nobody saw in the theaters. I don't think that. I just mean that on my rating system, it's like a B+. And don't get me wrong, I got chills the first time I see it. I got a little weepy the first time I saw Wakanda, because I was just like, wow, I never thought in a million years that I would see effing Wakanda on the big screen.
Of course, then everybody thought it was a real place, in which
I think it's a B movie
because it missed. Yeah. It could have been an A movie. Mm-hmm. But they missed the mark with, like, I thought they could have done more like as a 007 kind of character, like, and done more like here I'm using my brain to figure this out and solve the the problem.
Yeah, and I think now, my main problem with him is that mainly all these characters have plot armor, but his armor was just so powered that it's like, it's more powerful than Tony Stark's. It's more powerful than almost anybody besides like Thor or Hulk.
And it
got a little over. I thought he was a little overpowered in that.
And so Techno Balls is something that I saw in that movie. I was just like, I hate that. I hate it on every level. So as soon as I saw those techno balls, I was like,
I had no idea. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, and it looked familiar. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, fuck me, techno balls.
So that's one of the things that, you know, spoiler alert for future episodes, you and I have talked about this, but the creator of the show has come out and teased a very big cameo in episode 5. He has said that it'll make people cry. And the only other clue he gave is that he'd like to see this character hang out with Thor, that's the only one that throws me off, that makes me go, maybe he's not talking. But man, if Chadwick Boseman filmed a couple scenes in this before,
well, let's just think about the timeline.
I am gonna be crushed.
Did they film in 2019? My guess is yes. My guess would be that they probably filmed some of it at the late end of 2018 to 2019. Well,
I know that the reason that Falcon came second was because their shooting got delayed. So they were filming in 2019, but they were filming into 2020 when things started getting shut down. So or either that, or they were going to have some reshoots in 2020 that took a while to finish because of COVID and everything. So I think you're right. I think the timeline does work out that, you know, it could have happened in 2018, 2019.
I just remember, I know when I saw, there were a few pictures of Chadwick that had come out, and this is before anybody had even an inkling. And I looked at him, I said, he's got cancer. And I knew, I knew because he was dressing in very big robes and whatnot. And like, and I was like, something is not right. And this is not for a film. This is like everything that was like coming out. I was just like, no way, he's got cancer. I guarantee it. And so, but it's possible.
Yeah, I hadn't followed the tabloid stuff like that, but I will admit when I saw him walk out of the portal in Endgame, my first reaction was, God, he looks skinny there. I didn't put two and two together until that was the first thing I thought about when I heard he passed away, was him walking out of that portal and being like, and then when my girlfriend watched all the movies with us, she goes, oh God, he does look skinny there.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, he does.
something doesn't feel right.
And so I don't want to get my speculation hat on too hard because I had, you know, Hank McCoy and Reed Richards and Galactus showing up in the last movies I'm trying not to get too excited, but I do think that we are gonna, I have to feel that we have to be either getting a new character or, you know, something like this that's,
I don't know, Sam, we only got three episodes.
Yeah, I mean, we're halfway through.
You can't, this is a problem. You can't keep adding things in, like you can't add a full-blown character. And we already know about the Power Broker, right? So that has to be completed. But then again,
I think we're going to meet the Power Broker.
Sure.
I don't know that it's necessarily going to be somebody we already know, though. I've seen some people going, maybe it's Arnim Zola and maybe it's Sharon Carter. And yeah, I think Sharon Carter's the leader in the clubhouse, at least, just because
Sharon Carter does a heel turn.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. But at the same time, I don't know. I think that it could just be kind of like that. That scientist we met, where you're going like, ooh, who's the scientist? And it's just, you know, some new actor. You know, I don't know that the Power Broker is going to be somebody we've seen, unless the Power Broker is Batroc Zelibert.
Well,
and you know what I noticed in this one? It seems like Disney Plus is getting a little more violent acceptance. It seemed like they were really showing guys getting shot close up, as opposed to usually in the more PG stuff, it's bang bang and the guy falls down. I mean, Sharon Carter clocks some dudes in the face with bullets. I mean,
yeah. Well, and I think didn't Zemo kind of does a point blank, like you're on the ground, like tap tap.
Yeah. No.
Did,
yeah.
Because he kills the friggin' scientist guy, friggin' blows a hole in his little Konex container laboratory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So I was a little surprised. I was like, "Ooh, they're getting away with a little more violence. They're probably pushing the envelope a little bit where it might not qualify for the old PG-13, but it's they go, and nobody's complaining. They've been watching people get shot in Marvel movies for 10 years now. They're fine." But yeah, I feel like this was kind of a table setting episode. So I'm, what's it, Tuesday? Okay, so three more sleeps until we can get to the next episode.
Yeah. And I'm really thinking that the scene with John Walker, and I'm gonna call him Captain America, but you know, I think that scene where he tries to intimidate, I think that's going to be like a kind of a, that should be an earmark saying, yeah, I need the serum.
Now that made me think of something, the way he's going after these flag smashers so hard. And I remember Battlestar saying something like, look, I know you want this. I know how bad you want this kind of thing. Do you think maybe he's the one that sent the text to Carly saying you stole this from me and I'm going to kill you?
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's maybe him, that he was all jazzed about being picked as the next Captain America. He didn't get his super strong super soldier serum to be the perfect soldier he was hoping he was going to be. And now he's out there doing his best to go find the last of it so that he can be as good as Captain America, or if not better, you know, as much as he says he wants to be the best Captain America can be.
Well, he's laid on four grenades.
Yeah. So you can tell he likes being like, oh, well, I did this better. You know, he's the braggart guy. I think that's where we're going to find out, is that he is.
You're not the first person that I've heard say that. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some validity to it.
Although I thought one of those plot things at the end that's silly, they go, you know, so Bucky and Sam were here the day that Zemo escaped. Prison guard goes, yeah, you don't think they had anything to do with it, do you? And it's like, yeah. Well, oh, yeah. Did you want to put those together?
That was a great moment. That was the Soderbergh freaking Ocean's 11, like escape, which I thought was, I liked it. I liked it for what it was. I mean, I don't think it was like the best way to do it, but I thought it was very interesting. And it also just kept the story going.
But I mean, you also see what they did. He went there, he talked to him, he left. And as long as nobody saw him flick that note on the prisoner's table, they really didn't do anything. Zemo had it all ready to go. He just needed somebody to deliver the message so that he could cause the chaos to get out of there. So I knew that Zemo had something up his sleeve the second that, you know, he looked up at that camera at the end of episode two. So he's definitely someone to look out for, because even though he's helping him now, I have a feeling that he's not going to come back to prison easily. I think when this is all over, he's going to be like, okay, well, I still have my own thing, my own big fish.
Oh,
to fry.
Yeah. He's going to escape. That's a guarantee. Look, Buck is, look, he basically tried to see if he could still control him. And we still got to see Winter Soldier like level, like action in Madripoor, which was nice to not see a neutered Winter Soldier. That Bucky can do everything Winter Soldier can do.
It looked like he was enjoying it a little bit too.
Yeah. I mean, look.
Kind of like the therapist predicted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could see where like Zemo and Bucky have a relationship going on, where I could see like Bucky, like, just get out of here. And Zemo goes off to do his thing, because there's like just like an unspoken or spoken kind of connection, like we're both messed up, but I'm not going to jail, and I don't think you should have to either. You've done, you know, Zemo's trying to help him, even though Zemo, we know, has a bigger plan in play.
Mm-hmm. I think Zemo will be, I think he'll be key going forward, because he's so interesting in this show. I think that, you know, even just him pulling up at the end of the episode and going, supercharged. I got such a kick out of him this episode, just being such a smarmy know-it-all, and they had to follow him along. I mean, if the rumors are true that we're going to get a Thunderbolts movie or show down the line, I think that he would be perfect in it. And
what's the thing with Thunderbolts? Is that like all villains, but they play it being heroes?
Yeah, I can't remember, because I know there's like a Dark Avengers where Norman Osborn got a bunch of bad guys together, and they put the Avengers costumes on and tried to like pass themselves off as Avengers. Like, I think Norman Osborn was Iron Man, and Bucky was Captain America, and I think like Daken was Wolverine, and I can't remember exactly who was who. And I want to say that Baron Zemo was in there, but yeah. but there's also a version where they all take new names and try and show them off, show themselves off as heroes, and they're kind of almost like a Suicide Squad kind of thing. I'm not sure. That's a little bit, I know of it, but I don't know the details. But I think that would be an interesting thing, you know, get a Red Hulk, get a Baron Zemo, get an Abomination, you know, all of a sudden you've got a Thunderbolts kind of start, and we're going to get Abomination and the She-Hulk stuff.
Confirmed.
Yeah, that was confirmed in that whole Marvel dump last year around Christmas, around the same time they did the Star Wars dump, and they did that Marvel dump where they announced everything. They announced Tim Roth would be back as the Abomination.
Interesting.
That was another internet theory I saw, is that Bucky might need a lawyer at some point in this, and that Jennifer Walters would be the lawyer that shows up.
Damn, leave Bucky alone.
I know. It's like, didn't he just get a pardon? He's going to his therapy sessions. She signed off on this mission.
Yeah, that's not fair. You know, the thing is, Sam, like, after talking it through, like, I'm very accepting of, you know, and I know, like, Daredevil has had its sags. Of course, it had a lot more episodes to it. I'm just like, you know, when it's six episodes, like, everything matters. And I think because we were able to talk through some of it, like, I can get around some of my little, you know, again, like Zemo doing the dance and whatnot, because that's memeable at this point. I guarantee it has been gift at some level. But like, I feel like maybe this was a good interconnection, like a bridge to the next act, which is obviously Wakanda's pissed that Zemo's escaped and they want him. So, okay. I can get there. It was a little convoluted to get there.
Mm-hmm. No, I thought that was a good twist, because I did not see that coming at all. And so I wonder how much Wakanda we're going to get in this.
I don't think as much as you want.
No, I don't think it'll be a lot. My initial instinct says that she'll be in the next episode, and maybe that's it. You know, maybe a Black Panther, but I want to see this character interact with Thor. I feel like Black Panther and Thor would be kind of too, it seems like they would actually be kind of buddies, because they both were raised to be kings. They'd be like, oh yeah, I understand your struggles, friend.
That's an interesting way to think about it.
I'm along for the ride. You know, yep. They've built up enough goodwill these first two episodes that I kind of enjoyed it being more of a goofy, I can't run in these heels, you know, supercharged kind of funny episode. And so I feel like they probably, and even like you said, even so, we still got Sharon Carter sniping dudes and Black Widow, you know, throwing people to the ground kind of thing. And we got Winter Soldier beating some ass and looking like he knows what he's doing. And so we're halfway there. We'll see what happens in the next half. I'm dying to know what that cameo is going to be in episode five, but when they say it's going to make me cry, I'm just like, well, great. Now I know what's going to,
well, it's John Krasinski. He's going to come out. He's gonna be like, look, I'm Reed Richards. You guys all want to see me stretch and not do anything and talk science. That's what you want. You want John Krasinski.
I want Patch, Wolverine's alter ego, to show up as a bouncer.
It'll be Keanu Reeves, and everybody'll lose their freaking minds.
Well, have you watched anything else this week that you need to tell the people about?
Oh my gosh. I have been full. What have I been watching recently? I swear. Oh, you know, this isn't really streaming though. So I don't know if I can say it was YouTube. It was on YouTube.
Well, YouTube's. I got a YouTube app on my Roku, baby. That's fine.
All right. So I went back a few years and watched some old Survivor Man.
Oh, okay.
With Les Stroud.
Mm-hmm. I never watched it, but I know what it is. Yeah.
Always kind of interesting, and you end up kind of learning a little bit of something in the mix. Not saying this is like really, you know, look, of all the things we've talked about, Survivor Man really isn't high on the list. However, if you need something just to kind of jag around with, there you go. Survivor Man.
Nice. Let's see. I rewatched the movie About Time on Netflix the other day. Not a bad little time travel rom-com type of flick.
Was that the one with Justin Timberlake?
No, it's with, I think Rachel McAdams is in it, and General Hux, isn't it? I can't think of his name. But it's kind of a silly thing. He finds out from his dad one day that all the men in their family can time travel. And it's basically you go to a dark place, you really focus on something, you think about it, and then you're there at that point in time. So you can go back and relive points of your life. And it's kind of about him being like a hapless non-girlfriend having guy that's out there trying to, you know, throws himself at a girl and it doesn't work out. So he tries it 100 different ways and it keeps not working out. And he's like, okay, so nothing I could do would make this happen. So I will just move on. Now.
What's the name of this one?
About Time.
About Time. Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's some good actors and actresses in it. And I've been kind of re-binging Community. I don't know if you've ever watched that all the way through. It could just
I hate freaking Joel. What's McHale? I hate him. I hate him, Sam.
But you know what? They call him out about who he is. No, not the hair plugs. But they definitely like make fun of his type of person, because he's definitely like, I'm the cool kid who doesn't care about anybody. And they're constantly like, yeah, you're in our study group. You do care about us. Nice try.
I have watched a few episodes. It just has not grabbed me.
Yeah, it's a weird show getting rewatching, but it's like as I rewatch it, I'm kind of rediscovering the magic of why I loved it. And part of it is I went to a small school. I didn't go to community college, but I went to a small school, and there's definitely things about this that reminds me of St. Mary's, where I'm just like, oh, the one person that's in charge of everything that always looks like they're out of control. Just the small school aspect of knowing everybody in every class and seeing the same people all the time and stuff. So
that was like me at Ashland University, Ohio. Same thing. Yep.
So that's what I've been watching on Netflix. I'm very happy to report, even though this is not streaming, I'm a streamer only because I have YouTube TV, and my Top Chef is back, baby. So we are currently watching season 2 on Hulu and season 18 live throughout the week. So, you know, keep it up on that. That's a fun, if you like cooking at all, it's a fun show. And then just, you know, kind of waiting for Invincible to come back on, you know,
yeah, I think that's the way I was with Ink Master, because it got like fragmented across a bunch of different services, and I lost interest in it because I was like, I can't find where the new stuff is, and it got all weird. But I was like, I always thought like this is the craziest show. Like people are getting tattooed as a competition, and then they look at them and it's like, boy, that tattoo sucks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like you got this now on your body forever, and it looks like ass.
And then just kind of some things I got queued up is that there's some interesting stuff on HBO Max that I'm looking at. Well, one is, I don't know if you've ever seen Search Party. It's supposed to be a really good show. The main actress in it was from Arrested Development. I can't think of her name, but she played Maybe. And so it's about her kind of being it's almost like a junior detective type of thing. So one of her classmates goes missing from high school, and they try and find out what happened to her. And it's gone like 3 or 4 seasons. It's supposed to be really good. And then a couple of HBO Max originals that I thought this would be good for watching with the girlfriend were The Flight Attendant and Made for Love. Thought those looked interesting. So I will report back and let people know if those are worth wasting your time on or not.
Well, sounds good. We're, you know, just a little under an hour. Let's go on Pop Ship and get back into it. We got to get back into the stream.
Mm-hmm. So everybody hit us up on Twitter, Bother Mose, about watching Invincible, so we can get him on the train, because I implore you to just give the first episode a watch it all the way through the, you know, because it kind of
we're gonna need to talk about it, because Winter Soldier will be over with, so we need something to monkey bar over to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, we're gonna have Loki after this, we're gonna have you know, The Bad Batch is coming in May, so maybe we can talk about that, see if it's any good.
I don't know. The price went up on Disney Plus.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. I just got my notification. It went up.
Oof. And you know what? I just bought an iPad for my dad's business through them. I should be getting another year of Disney Plus through Verizon for free, damn it. I just need to give them a call and give them the what fur.
Yeah.
And we didn't even talk about Rick and Morty's coming back in June. So I,
yeah, people get triggered over that.
Because do we want those fans to listen to us? I don't know.
Of course we do. Of course we do.
We want all the listeners.
Even though they, you know, most of the time, you know, Rick and Morty fan thinks that they're smarter than everybody else. However, they're always welcomed.
I mean, comes right from a man, Dan Harmon, who created Community.
I know, so. It doesn't make any sense to me.
You know what? It really, if you go back and watch Community, though, it really does, because you can tell Rick and Morty has they literally almost should title their episodes the blank 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 episode. You know, this is the Aquaman episode. This is the time travel episode. And Community was very much like that. Like, they literally call out that they have a bottle episode when they have a bottle episode. They have a paintball episode that's like a war movie, or, you know, kind of like an action movie thing. Like, they do an action movie episode, or they literally do episodes where they're based on like a movie or a TV show. And sometimes
you're twisting my arm a little bit, but if I have to, but the thing is, I get so focused on those hair plugs.
You know what? I should curate an episode.
That's what you need to do.
You.
That's what I need. Maybe
that's my homework for the next show. Is I will curate a Community playlist that if you don't like this, and it's tough, because I feel like part of that show is kind of falling in love with the character slowly as you watch through them. Because it really does have kind of a Parks and Rec, like, they're all very different people, but they're all interesting in their own way kind of thing. Maybe not as lovable as Parks and Rec, but they will come to kind of grow on you as you get to know each character and, you know, realize that they're not just catchphrases or whatever. Except
it's the new Operation Mayhem.
Except maybe my man, who's the old guy in it. God dang it. He's
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase was maybe a little out of his time in it.
Well, he is a man out of time. That's a fact.
Yeah, no, there's some questionable jokes in there that he definitely is the guy that calls people out by their race or their sexuality and stuff, where you're like, ooh, these didn't, for this show being less than 10 years old, this didn't age well.
Yep. Stereotypes are funny. And if you don't think that, then what can we do? Mm-hmm. All right. And with that, I'm going to go get canceled, and we'll see you on the streaming streamways.
Bye, everybody. Woo.